atop the vaporator, which also happened to be where the transmitter was located. A daylight raid. And now this. It added up. Plug Eyes here! The crafty Tuscan had figured it out somehow and was trying to gag the Oasis before any cry for help could be raised. Ben yanked at Oren's sleeve. They're not in the garage complex yet. Oren looked back. Only one bay was open. The one Annalene's landspeeder had exited earlier. What Ben said was true, but it didn't make sense.
There's a pass-through between the store and the garages, Oren yelled. If they're in the store, why haven't they come through there yet?
Tuscans attacking from the garages would effectively envelop them.
I don't know, Ben said. Something's stopping them. Let's take advantage. Get people to safety.
It made sense. Oren gestured for the surviving Deveronians, both scared witless, to make a break for the open garage. They did, and the others followed one by one. After Ben helped Zed, in agony since his attack, stagger in, Mullen and Oren followed. Now their cover became the Tuscans' cover, as the warriors crouched behind the landspeeders and fired into the garage bay. Oren looked back at the warp floor. If they could avoid the Tuscans' blaster fire, they could reach the hallways leading to the rest of the bays, including those with the settlers' call vehicles. There would be more weapons there, and a chance of escape. And he and Annalene both had the codes to open the doors. But Ben, crouching with poor Bomer, kept looking at the doorway leading back to the store. There's a reason they haven't come through, Ben said. He seemed to be concentrating. How anyone could concentrate in this situation was beyond Oren.
What difference does it make?
No, Ben said.
Listen.
Oren stood as close to the doorway as he dared, fearing Plug Eye and friends would charge in at any second. But all he could hear was blaster fire and the horrific screams of Tuscans. What in? Oren looked back at the people in the garage, hiding behind equipment and firing out at the Tuscans. His kids and Zed, Annalene and her kids. Who were the Tuscans inside fighting?
Was anyone else coming from Mos Espa? Annalene asked from cover. We left early to beat the rush,
Oren said, scratching the side of his head with the handle of his blaster.
Was anyone else in the store?
Annalene's eyes widened.
Ben, she said. The surveillance cams.
Ben looked to his side. There was a flickering screen, a monitoring station for all the locations within the garage. Oren watched as Ben quickly cycled through them. The man seemed to know his way around the security system, the farmer noticed. The garage bays all seemed empty of Tuscans. The only activity was in the store, which came up as the final image.
That's what I thought,
Ben said, turning. A determined look on his face, he left Oren's side and reached for one of Glomer's big fire extinguisher canisters.
Hold the fort,
he said, as he disappeared around the corner into the pass-through. Oren's jaw dropped.
Is the man crazy?
Ben!
Annalene yelled. Heedless of the incoming blaster fire, she dived across the garage floor to Oren's side.
Ben's unarmed, she yelled to Oren. We've got to follow him.
No,
Oren said, clutching at her sleeve.
Wait, look here.
Annalene glanced for an instant at the security monitor, and then looked again at it, gawking alongside Oren. There, in the overhead view of the retail store, they saw what was occupying the Sand People. Old Ulbrecht had wedged himself behind the collapsed rifle racks and the weapons counter and was using the full arsenal at hand to keep the Tuscans at bay.
Well, I'll be,
Oren said, bringing the cam into focus on the old man.
I'll be blasted.
So will he, Annalene said. He can't hold out much longer.
More Tuscans were entering the store from the front entrance and the livery yard. She tugged at Oren.
We've got to!
At that moment, the scene on the monitor began to cloud up. The blaster fire could still be seen. And then, just light. Blue light, flashing around in a haze. Warren shook his head, unbelieving. What's happening in there?
Annalene broke loose from his hold and dashed into the hallway. Orin looked back at the others in the garage.
Hold him off! I'll be back! He shouted.
Orin ran through the short hallway. He skidded to a stop when he saw Annalene ahead, just standing there, her ankles lost in a lowering cloud of chemical retardant. The haze inside was still thick, but the flashing blue lights had stopped. And in place of the many combatants seen on the monitor earlier, only one figure stood now amid the smashed tables of the luncheonette. Ben, standing over the bodies of a dozen or more sand people, his hand slipped inside his tunic, as casually as if he were putting away his credit pouch. A familiar old and now very weary voice came through the mist from Orin and Annalene's right. While Ulbrich popped out from behind the gun counter, repeating blaster rifle in hand.
Die, you wretched!
Ben stepped quickly between the old farmer and the newcomers.
It's all right, Master Ulbrich. It's just friends here.
He gestured to the fallen sand people.
You got them all.
Warren looked at the bodies, stunned, and then up at Ben. The man had a canny look on his face.
While did all this?
Suddenly self-conscious, Ben stammered.
I saw what he was up against.
He gestured to the spent canister nearby.
They just needed a little distraction so he could finish the job.
Annalene looked dumbfounded. At Ben, then at Ulbrich, and finally at the mess of a store.
I'm speechless, she said.
Orin looked at the old man, coughing as he staggered out from behind his makeshift fortress.
I woke up and these characters were coming in,
Ulbrich said, eyes wandering in tired amazement.
I don't rightly know how I got them all.
But you did,
Ben quickly offered.
Every one. All on your own.
Orin shook his head. Old Ulbrich would be telling this story for years. Orin stepped over to try to help the frazzled man stand, only to have his effort rebuffed.
Let me go, Galt,
Ulbrich snarled at him, suddenly fully aware again.
And you wanted to provide security for me? You can't even keep your own spread safe.
Orin's breath caught in his throat. Yes, this surely looked bad. But the blaster fire was still going outside, and the other Tuscans might re-enter at any minute. He prodded Ulbrich toward the center of the store, and the old man didn't object. Annalene was in motion now. Stepping over bodies, she reached her counter. Ben saw her kneel and start to dig around.
What are you looking for?
The cash box!
Orin raised an eyebrow.
I don't think the Tuscans care much for credits.
Annalene ignored him. Finding the box beneath a smashed shelf, she slipped Danar's old pistol from its position in the lock.
Here,
she said, tossing the weapon to Ben. Orin darted from one shelf to another, trying to stay out of sight of the doorways. There were Tuscans everywhere outside, and with the screen of the chemical fog dissipating, every entrance was vulnerable. Reaching Ben, Orin saw the man holding the pistol, contemplating it.
I hope you learned to use that where you came from.
Ben had started to respond when figures loomed in the doorways on every side of the store. Tuscans all, carrying Gaderfi and blaster rifles. Orin started to raise his rifle, only to have Ben place his hand on the farmer's wrist.
Not now,
Ben said. The Tuscans at the front of the store parted to allow another to enter. Orin strained to see through the haze. Shorter than the others, this one wore looser-fitting robes with no bandolier and only a single eyepiece on the left. A red gem glinted where the right eye should be.
Plug eye,
Orin whispered gravely.
This was it. He hoped his kids had made it out. But the lead Tuscan wasn't interested in Orin. A wrapped hand thrust forward, pointing at Annalene.
Ena Grosh.
A low voice said, less guttural than the other Tuscans whom Orin had heard. And he heard many. Now as the others repeated the same word.
Ena Grosh.
They mean you, Ben said, watching Annalene walk around from behind the counter, cash box in hand. Orin moved to stop her, but Ben again held his arm.
I think she's got this,
he said confidently. Annalene stood bravely before the Tuscans, opened the cash box, and pressed the button of the small device inside. A device Orin recognized as the remote control activator for the settler's call. A call which now went out from the oasis, both over the airways, and as a roaring scream from a siren outside. A siren that still worked. The recorded crate dragon screeched, and behind Plug Eye, the sand people responded, as sand people usually did.
We're closed, Annalene said coldly.
Get the hell out of my store.
Chapter 17.
For the second time in a month, a Yark stood before a human settlement, yelling after fleeing cowards.
Pradora! Pradora! Hoax!
It was no use. Despite the war leader's efforts to teach the others, it was the morning raid at the farm all over again. A Yark had explained that the crate dragon call was a deceit. They even knew how to silence it, by attacking the towering water leech with a soundmaker atop it. Their minds understood, and their bodies had followed the initial plan, but their attacks had failed to squelch the siren, and now their spirits betrayed them. Even Adin had fled the airshaper's home, ignoring his honored parent. A Yark looked back over the rise of the structure. The airshaper was still in there, as were the bodies of the first wave of Tuscan attackers. So many slain. Had the airshaper somehow struck them down? This was her sanctuary. It made sense she would call upon all her powers to defend it. But a Yark still knew the numbers favored the Tuscans if they could be compelled to fight. Young Adin skittered up the dune.
We must go,
the youth said, rushed breaths whistling through his mouthpiece.
Now!
Adin was a Yark's only surviving child. Yet the warrior struggled to resist the urge to smash the youth's face in. Such fear in a Yark's bloodline? Unthinkable. So Ayark chose not to think on it.
No. Recall the others. We get what we came for, or...
The warrior's head turned. The siren was still blaring, its scream having resolved into a long monotone. But there was another sound there, too.
Land speeders!
Ayark spat. Responding to the alarm, or arriving by chance, it didn't matter. Ayark looked south. The retreat of the others had turned into a mad dash, all of them heedless of their leader and without any care for their camping gear, abandoned in the staging area. Adin bowed his head, looking suddenly quite small.
Honored parent, we must go.
All my offspring were born under the cowardly sun,
a Yark said, stomping past the child warrior.
We must catch up to the others.
It is right. They go to safety.
No,
a Yark said, hardly believing what was happening.
We must catch them, because they're heading the wrong way.
The ground quaked beneath Orin's dress boots. A dozen meters above, the settler's call siren screamed its ear-piercing warning to the oasis and beyond. But neither sound waves nor retreating Tuscans could distract the farmer from the sorry sight in front of him. The base of old number one sparked, The vaporator's control panels bashed to bits. Danar's secret formula was gone. Orin had recorded the settings many times over the years, with the Calwell's permission, but the water from his pretorments had never been as sweet. Old number one was unique. Some flaw, some short circuit, perhaps even some rewiring Danar had never told him about. Orin had feared to pry further into the device so as not to destroy its magic. Now it was gone. But the siren had done its job safe on its mount. It had been Danar's notion to place it up there. Orin would have preferred to see it located anywhere else in case the thing upset the prized vaporator's performance. Danar had safeguarded against that by powering the alarm independently from the vaporator's grid. That decision by a dead friend had saved them all. Short of climbing to the top or knocking the column over, the brutes had no chance of disabling the Clarion. Danar had saved them. And now, the siren would avenge him and his home. Settlers arrived by land speeder and Dubak, Eopian speeder bike. All had been returning from Mos Espa, already bound for the claim. The siren and digital signal had sped them along. Orin turned to the gathering group. Settlers thronged outside the garages and store. The Tuskens hadn't caused the initial land speeder wreck, but the vehicles, scorched by blaster bolts, gave the impression that they were in a war zone. Jabe and Vika were inside the store, relaying rifles uncovered from the collapsed racks out to the would-be vigilantes. Outside, Mullen held up his hands, directing the settlers to form a perimeter. The Tuskens had withdrawn, but they could return at any time. Anyone as crazy as Plug-Eye could do anything. Orin shook his head at his recollection of the vaunted warrior. No vengeful demon, just a Tuscan, short and a bit stocky, unafraid of the siren, but unable to calm the others. Well, maybe that would protect the claim now. He looked to where Ben was kneeling with the Rodian. Doc Mel, who had returned from the races with his youngling, approached Orin.
"Bomber's alive," the Mon Calamari said.
"Alive?"
"I can't figure out how. You said that human was tending to him?"
"As soon as the Tuskens left, I saw..." "No, I didn't see what Ben was doing. But he must have dressed the wound."
Orin breathed a sigh of relief, his first real one in an hour.
"Rodian's skin must be tough."
Doc Mel looked back in wonder.
"We'll still need to get him to Bastine in my speeder right away."
Orin nodded.
"We'll clear a path."
The place had become a traffic jam. Drills prepared farmers to arrive in an orderly manner to arm themselves, departing in the call fund's war-ready vehicles. But everyone had come from one direction this time, and the parking area was a mess.
"Sir!"
It was an alien voice, one Orin had momentarily forgotten all about. The two Deveronian executives appeared next to him, carrying their colleague on a litter. He was dead.
"We've paid someone to return us to Mos Eisley," the older of the pair said, his voice somber. "There is a funeral to prepare."
Orin lowered his head.
"If you'll wait, I'll..."
"No waiting."
The Deveronians moved the corpse toward one of the newly arrived landspeeders.
"I recognize your loss,"
Orin said, struggling to sound respectful while making himself heard amid the growing commotion.
"But after a while, we can discuss things again. You still have a hotel, and I still have..."
"No,"
the younger Deveronian replied gravely.
"You brought us to see the Galt Farms. We saw a barbaric place. One you can't defend, even for a day."
He looked down sadly at his dead companion.
"Poor Jervet feared this trip was a fool's errand. It seems in death he was right."
Orin raised his hands.
"Please understand. Excuse us."
Orin watched plaintively as his would-be business partners proceeded with their unhappy chore. His mind raced. There still might be some way to salvage the deal. But so much was happening, and now he was aware of a grating voice nearby. Ulbrich was outside, recovered and telling his tale of heroism to anyone who'd listen. And people were listening, amazed. There were a dozen dead Tuscans in the shop. Everyone near an entrance was taking a look as Annalene and others tried to move the bodies. Blaster bolts had killed some, but others looked seared and scarred. What had Ulbrich found beneath the counter to shoot them with? The old man hadn't seemed to know himself earlier. But now he was filling in blanks as quickly as he could imagine them. Ben, the drifter, remained in the story, but he'd arrived after it was all over. The crazy fool bringing a can of fire retardant to a gunfight. There was something else in Ulbrich's tale, which he repeated every third sentence.
Sure, I did it myself. You can't depend on Galt and his little club for nothing. Settlers call.
He spat through brown teeth.
Settlers fall is more like it.
That's not fair, Wile.
Orin pushed through the crowd toward the old man.
This was a fluke.
A festival day. I wouldn't pay another credit to that fund if I were you,
Ulbrich shouted.
I'd want a refund.
Around him, several of the listeners nodded and began chattering to one another.
No!
Orin could feel his heart thumping.
Listen to me, all of you!
He'd stepped over to his landspeeder, putting his boot on the hood just as he'd done in his victory celebration days earlier. It was the same pose, the same crowd, but so different now.
Everyone, the call worked! Annie just didn't have her activator at hand. As soon as the alarm sounded, they all took off like scared womp rats.
He raised his voice.
All of them! Even Plug-Eye!
Plug-Eye?
The dissonant conversations in the crowd suddenly became one.
Plug-Eye was here?
Asked a farmer.
Yes, and they all headed that way,
Orin said, pointing toward the south.
We got a report from a skyhopper. They're headed toward Hunter's Gorge.
The buzz became silence. Then the party erupted into shouts. Someone said it.
We go now, we can get them all!
Orin looked around, uncertain as the clamor rose. Of course, the mob was right, the prospect obvious. Plug-Eye had brought out more warriors than had been seen in recent memory. Now they were fleeing toward Hunter's Gorge, a well-mapped part of the Jundland Wastes that sat close to the nearest entrance to the Roya Rift, the rocky labyrinth where the Tuscans liked to hide. Plug-Eye might think they were heading for safety, but in fact, they were moving into a trap. This could be a chance for the settlers' call posse to eliminate the Sand People and finish off the threat once and for all. Orin glanced at the departing Deveronians and then down at Ulbrich. The old man had lost his audience, but he'd be talking again soon. Orin had to preempt that. He looked up at the suns. Seeing lots of daylight left, Orin made a decision. No, he couldn't let this go unanswered. The Tuscans had struck the heart of the operation, knowingly or not. The locals paid their hard-earned credits to the settlers' call fund. If the call couldn't protect its own headquarters, it wasn't much good, was it? He shot a direct look at Mullen.
All right, this is it. Muster drivers to the left, gunners to the right.
He smiled darkly and fired his blaster into the air.
We're going hunting!
This is disgusting,
Lily said, poking a Tuscan corpse with a broom handle. Her crimson nose crinkled.
I don't think I'm eaten here again.
Thanks for your support, Annalene said, pulling at a canvas tarp. A dead Tuscan warrior lay face down on it, the body jostling as she dragged it toward the eastern door of the claim. She didn't know what sand people ate, but this one weighed plenty. Plug Eye's party had barely been gone when Annalene had set to work calculating how to repair her store. It couldn't wait. Too many people had seen the mess in the claim and had reacted just as Lily had. There wasn't any thought of opening again today. The Tuscans had ruined a profitable evening along with her property. But if there was any hope for the future, the cleanup couldn't wait. Callie, her riding kerchief pulled up over her mouth, re-entered, and pitched a pair of gloves to Lily. "Ready for another one," the girl said. "Should we start piling them in the dewback pen?" "Can't," Annalene said. "They stink too much. The dewbacks will never sleep there again." She turned to her daughter. "Tie a hover pallet to the back of the light van. We'll haul it into the Rumbles as soon as Oren gives us the all clear."
"The Rumbles? We'll have corpses rolling off all over the place."
"I really don't care."
Annalene glared back at the black smear on the floor where the Tuscan had been. Let a sarlacc have what was left. A total violation of everything she held dear, and on this day too. Annalene had stepped outside only once, just long enough to see what had happened to old number one. It was one of Danar's last daily presences in her world, and she could tell from 20 meters away that it was damaged beyond repair. At least her family was fine. Although, she could think of better ways of sobering Jabe up than a Tuscan attack. All her worries from before felt like a relief now. Disciplining her son? What was wrong with him? Should be a cinch after all this. Ben appeared in the doorway from the garage. "Dr. Malice left with Bomer," he said, wiping his hands in a rag. "He'll survive."
"It's a miracle," Annalene said, brightening. "I don't know what you did, Ben, but I'm glad you were here today."
Lily looked up from her mopping. She pointed at Ben and then at Annalene.
"You and you, you were here together today?"
"All day,"
Callie whispered to Lily, loudly enough so Annalene could hear.
"Alone."
Lily looked back at Annalene and raised an eyebrow.
"There were also some Tuscans," Ben said. "I'd better go."
He put the hood back over his head and walked swiftly past the Zeltron woman. Lily smirked as he passed. Annalene gave an exhausted sigh and nodded. She started toward the stack of water containers, leaning but intact.
"You should probably get that water you paid for."
She pulled off her gloves and started to walk toward him, but he was already opening the door.
"Wahoo!"
came a call from outside. Ben paused in the doorway as one landspeeder after another drove past, full of cheering passengers. Annalene trudged toward the door, wearily.
"If those are fans back from the race," she thought, "they're going to be disappointed."
But when she joined Ben outside, she saw the garages had emptied of settlers' fund vehicles, all of which were now streaming to the south, crammed with hollering, blaster-wielding settlers, young and old, mostly young. And Oren's USV-5 was far in the lead, carrying several.
"Oh, dear," Ben said. "You don't think..."
"I do think," Annalene said, swearing. She ran back toward the garages, calling for her son. She found only Zed, seated and massaging his injured ribcage in a medicated stupor. It took 2 tries to get him to answer.
"They've gone after Plug Eye," he finally said, wincing. "Hunter's Gorge."
"Jabe! Did they take Jabe?"
"He was the first to go,"
the farmhand said, grinning through broken teeth.
"I hope he fries a few for me."
Furious, Annalene dashed past the injured man into the garage. 20 seconds later, she emerged astride an old speeder bike, one of Glomer's less used rentals. Gunning it around the corner of the store, she saw Ben walking toward his EOP.
"Jabe's gone with them," she said, hovering. "They're headed for Hunter's Gorge."
Ben looked at her with concern.
"I don't know the place. How bad is it?"
"Bad enough. There's no way out of there," she said. "The Tuscans will have no choice but to fight."
Ben's eyes narrowed. He's with Orin. But that didn't mean much earlier.
I know.
Annalene gripped the throttle. He's 16, Ben, and he was drinking. I don't know what shape he's in right now.
I'm worried about the shape you're in. You're exhausted.
He stepped toward her and took hold of one of the handlebars. Even with the bike in pause mode, her hands were shaking, but her eyes blazed with determination and anger.
This is the day I lost Danhar, and I nearly lost his store today.
I'm not losing his son today, too.
I'll go instead,
Ben said after a moment.
I'll look after the boy.
Look after us both, or neither of us, she said, twisting the throttle and scooting forward on the seat.
Because I'm going.
Chapter 18.
Annalene's pulse hadn't slowed at all as the kilometers sped past, but it felt better to have Ben with her. She felt his arms grip around her stomach as the speeder bike banked. She had chosen to drive. She knew where they were going, and Ben had seemed willing to let her take the lead. The afternoon suns beat down on her forehead. She'd left without headwear. What had she said to Ben about the suns and aging? Try having kids, she thought.
Jay, what was wrong with that kid?
So he hated working in the store. She'd been bored too at his age, but she had to work, and so did he. She could understand his hanging around with the Galt to let off steam, but the boy was slight, no scrapper like Zed, no beady-eyed gunslinger like Mullen. Bounty hunting was not in his future. Why risk his neck hunting Tuskens? She already knew the answer. The Tuskens had killed his father. Today was an anniversary for Jabe as well. She just hoped she could reach him in time.
A Yark screamed in agony. The warrior had never run so hard for so long. Sand people knew how to run. The cowardly sun had taught them that much. But there was a reason Tuskens seldom strayed far from their camps and banthas. The Gaderfi was a fine weapon to hold for a sprint, but after a distance it became cumbersome, and even the nimblest runner risked a bashed kneecap. A Yark had slammed both in this chase, further aggravating leg muscles that were already on fire. And without their banthas to guide them, green warriors were likely to lose their way. The group ahead had. The foolishness was theirs, but the failure belonged to a Yark, who'd calculated for a successful raid and an orderly withdrawal. Unless a Yark turned the fleeing warriors around, all would perish. Adin had the speed of youth. The newest warrior of the clan had dashed ahead, carrying a Yark's warning. The Tuskens had passed through the box canyon known as the False Mouth, thinking it led into the pillars. A path did exist that led up and out, but only a Yark knew where it was. A silver landspeeder screeched past, the vehicle of the Smiling One. I should have killed you when I had the chance, a Yark thought. A Yark dived behind a dark formation on the craggy hillside and watched. More machines followed. Some bore toward the False Mouth, but others parted from the company and headed up the navigable inclines east and west of the gap. A flying machine with angular wings hovered above, just out of rifle range. So many settlers. So many vehicles. The Smiling Man's forces had thwarted a Yark's band in the past, killing some and driving the rest away. But this was different. A Yark had struck at the human in his lair and failed. No quarter would be given. A Yark saw the flyer pass between the suns. The elder son had failed to kill too. His sentence was a lifetime of running. A Yark could flee now and live.
but not the rest. And Ayark had sent a dean to join them. The last surviving son. The end of the line.
Many lines are ending.
Ayark cursed the pain and dashed up the hill.
You got him! You got him!
Orin's face beamed as he clicked off the comlink. The Skyhopper had led them well, its operator calling down the locations of the Tuskens below. Further confirmation came from the Tuskens' futile blaster fire into the air, useless attempts to bring the three-winged vessel down. A volcanic coulee in the foothills of the Jundland Wastes, Hunter's Gorge twisted from its wide opening back around two corners. There it branched off into a dozen steep staircases, most too tall even for a Wookiee to scale. But the eastern and western walls of the canyon were level on top, and the settlers had something the Tuskens didn't. Eyes in the air. The Tuskens had walked into a death chamber.
Hang back from the edge!
Orin ordered the settlers parked nearby. There was no sense drawing fire.
Wait until they try to climb out. Then take them.
It was already happening. Atop an escarpment jutting into the gorge, another group of settlers was already firing downward, picking off Tuskens like insects on a wall. Orange blasts peppered the cliff face around the nomads. One after another, they howled and fell. More settlers, he recognized Jabe and Vika among them, fired on those who hit the ground. Cheers went up to Orin's left as the scene repeated farther up the canyon. Orin had been reluctant to make a sortie so soon after the Oasis attack, but he realized now it was the thing to do. The people needed it. The locals wouldn't feel the same about the claim or the settlers' call without something to cauterize the wound. The attack deserved an answer. No, this had to happen. And as he casually walked toward the edge, rifle raised, he was surprised how good it felt. He wasn't alone. He saw the same buoyant spirit in the faces of those around him. Several he recognized as neighbors from the east who'd gone to bury the bodies of Klieg Lars's posse years earlier. He couldn't imagine what they'd seen that day. Few had ever talked about it since. Some had wanted to retaliate then, but they understood that going on a hunt so far from territory they knew was a recipe for disaster. Orin thought it did something to a person to walk away from a scene like that. You could hide and tell yourself you were doing the right thing, but any blood a human had would turn to dust or acid. For them, this moment was more than right. It was necessary. He crouched as he reached the edge. Such caution wasn't necessary. No return fire came from the floor of the gorge. Dozens of rag-wrapped warriors ran this way and that, some abandoning their gaffy sticks and guns as they sought pathways out of the death zone. What a dumb bunch, Orin thought. He'd been afraid they'd gotten smarter when they attacked the Oasis. An improbable concept, to be sure. Couldn't be much intelligence attached to bandaging one's head and living in the desert. But Danar's claim was the center of defense for all the land surrounding the Pika Oasis, and hadn't they attacked the tower with the siren? Watching the savages scuffle to survive now, he decided it was random chance. Plug-Eye might have some sense, but the rest of the Tuskens were of low quality. Orin knelt and set to work, lowering their quantity. A slight-looking raider was high on the far rise, scrambling up a rocky incline toward a gap. Orin sighted the bandit and fired. The shot struck the Tuscan in the center of his back, throwing him across the other side of the crest and out of sight.
"Was that Pluggy?"
his neighbor asked.
"Too tall. But we'll sort him out later," Orin said.
He clucked.
"They're wearing their death shrouds, folks. Put them in the ground."
Annalene gasped. From the western side of the gorge, she and Ben had ridden up a spiraling, pebbled approach to a notch in the hillside. Creeping up the shattered rock incline, she heard the shots echoing all throughout the canyon. Now, lying on her stomach, she saw everything.
They're being massacred.
Ben, a few meters behind her, said nothing.
The Tuscans, I mean,
Annalene said, looking back over her shoulder at him.
They're being massacred.
I know, Ben said. He was kneeling, his eyes closed. He seemed to have a headache. From the suns or the sounds or the whole day, Annalene didn't know. He seemed to have gone to that dark place again. The place that his trips to the claim had helped him escape. But she could feel a headache coming herself, especially when she spied Jabe, happily blasting away in the shooting gallery alongside his friends. She shook her head. There was no reaching Jabe's location from here, but he wasn't in any danger, and neither were she and Ben. She stood, intending to try to yell to her son, but muscles that had been tensed since the Tuscans arrived at the claim suddenly became jelly. Feeling the wind leaving her, she fell to her knees, eyes still focused on Jabe. Ben joined her at the lookout point. Kneeling beside her, he spoke, his tones low and measured. How does this make you feel? Given what the Tuscans did to Dana and to your store. Bad. Annalene closed her eyes, not realizing why she'd answered that way. And then she said it again. Bad. Ben lowered his head. For a moment, she thought she heard him say, good. A yark leapt, cape blousing as boots hit the ground. Up from the gully, another warrior cowered beneath an overhang. Seeing a yark, the terrified warrior crept out, quivering. Not my son. A yark simply pointed to the short rise behind. Another coward, another lost fool who didn't deserve saving. But there'd be time for recriminations later. A blaster shot struck the nearby rock face. Throbbing feet again went into motion. A yark knew the gorge and its places to hide. A Dean would be somewhere. Dean, who had listened and not fled. Listened and gone to find the others. A yark heard more Tuscan voices over the rise. There was still a chance.
That's a speedy one,
Mullen said, watching his father shoot.
Yep.
Oren couldn't keep a bead on the Tuscan, but it hardly mattered. One sand person would hop out of his rifle sights, and another would dart back in, begging to be scorched. Blaster bolts everywhere, all heading in one direction. This was one of the great battles, Oren thought. Centuries earlier, Alcara, a researcher-turned-bandit, had turned on his Tuscan allies in the great Maestro Plateau, wiping them all out. Scores of Tuscans had been slain more than a decade earlier, caught up in a battle between huts. No one counted bodies those times. Of the former, only the legend existed. Oren was a farmer, not a general. But he had a feeling the Comet Run Day battle would be high on the list of Tuscan takedowns of all time. It was dizzying. Lowering his rifle, his eyes went from one corpse to another. So many it began to give him pause. Too much, he said to his son under his breath. A fellow farmer overheard him and laughed.
What, are you boys afraid we'll put the settlers' call out of business?
Mullen shot his father an anxious look.
No, Oren said, raising his voice. There'll always be sandies behind every rock in the wastes.
He went back to his crouch and scanned the nooks in the opposing rock face. Tracing a tumble down upward, he saw movement. His finger brushed the trigger for half an instant before his mind registered what he'd seen.
Annie.
Mullen stepped up behind him as Oren stood and pointed. They passed Mullen's macro binoculars back and forth. It was Annalene, all right. Oren saw. And Ben. Again.
"You're just sitting there," Mullen said. "Don't they want a piece of this?"
Oren looked back and cracked a smile. "Not everyone's a fighter." Annalene turned back toward the speeder bike, hovering at the foot of the rocky stair. There wasn't much else she could do, she thought. Oren would get Jabe home, and there was so much to take care of back at the store. Her shoulders sinking, she looked at Ben.
"My guests are gone. I'm sure we could use a hand on cleanup if you wanted to stay. I really should fetch Rue and go home." "Fine."
She didn't try to argue. She started down the hill, past enormous boulders, toward the vehicle. She didn't get there. A tall Tuscan emerged from behind a great rock. Gaderfi clutched overhead in both hands. For a moment, she stood motionless, too startled to move. The Tuscan did the same, recognizing her.
"Anna Grosh!"
Annalene felt Ben's arm touch hers from behind. And then the world went flying around her. In the next second, Ben was standing where she had been, arms raised and grappling with the Tuscan for control of the great weapon. Brown and tan capes spiraled in a stumbling dance across the broken ground, boots just missing Annalene where she had fallen. She reached out, hoping to grab the Tuscan's boot and trip him. But in the confusion, she caught Ben instead, sending him off balance. The Tuscan surged forward in anger, forcing Ben backward. Knocked to the ground, Ben clung to the Gaderfi with both hands, pushing up against the weight of the attacker, now trying to crush him. Scrambling to her knees, Annalene suddenly remembered the one thing she'd brought with her besides Ben and the speeder bike. Ripping the blaster from her holster, she stumbled toward the Tuscan, preparing a point-blank shot. Only to see the raider suddenly go limp. A dead weight. Ben heaved at the Gaderfi and the figure rolled over and over again, tumbling down the incline toward the speeder. Annalene reached for Ben.
"Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," he said, brushing himself off. "But I think our friend was almost dead when he got to me." Keeping her pistol pointed at the body, Annalene slowly approached. The Tuscan's robes were singed, the result of a precision blaster rifle shot.
"Dying, but he tried to kill you."
"He made one last effort," Ben said, bringing the warrior's weapon downhill.
Annalene looked back at Ben in disbelief. Calm as usual.
Ben passed her and knelt next to the Tuscan's body.
"Yes,"
he said, examining the corpse. "Dead for sure. And young, too. Probably Jabe's age." Annalene's eyes widened. She had never looked closely at a sand person. One didn't want to linger around them too long, as she'd just experienced, and there wasn't much to see. The wrappings, robes, and cape all hid the figure within. But she could see it now as Ben rolled the Tuscan over. The warrior's frame was slight, like her boy's.
"Jabe's age,"
she said, staring at Ben skeptically.
"People, just like us?"
"No, that's not the lesson here." He looked up at her. "You wanted to be an exobiology student. The galaxy is full of creatures that are nothing like us at all. We can try to understand them, and we should. But even if we accept that they're doing what comes naturally, one is not beholden to comply when the Sarlacc asks for dinner." Annalene chuckled for the first time since that afternoon in the store. But the breath of relief that followed wasn't fully out of her lungs before she saw another figure peeking over the northern ridge at her. The sight froze her in place.
"Plug Eye,"
she said, recognizing the face from earlier. "And company," Ben said, gesturing west and south. All the survivors were here, it seemed, lurking over the hillsides. Heads bobbed up and disappeared, as did Gaddafi and blaster rifles. Annalene started toward the speeder bike. Ben rose and stopped her.
No, he said.
They'll shoot us just as the posse shot at them.
The posse?
Annalene looked back at the rise to the east. She and Ben would be targeted for sure trying to scramble up there. And none of Oren's group knew they were even here.
There was motion beyond the hills.
They're regrouping.
Probably making sure we're alone, he said, lowering his voice.
Stay calm and follow my lead.
She looked at him, startled.
To do what?
A little exobiology experiment,
he said, kneeling beside the dead Tuscan.
Quick, give me a hand.
Chapter 19.
This is crazy, this is crazy.
Annalene shivered in the afternoon suns, oblivious to the heat. Fear had long since turned her blood to ice, her muscles to stone. Still, Ben walked, so she did too. They walked on either side of the hovering speeder bike, each holding a handlebar. The dead warrior's Gaddafi stick was propped across the bars, in front of them at chest level, as they pushed the vehicle forward. Slumped over the seat lay the body of the Tuscan Raider, half-hanging where Ben had placed it. She'd thought Ben insane when he'd lifted the stinking corpse from the ground, and had raised her voice to object when he hefted it atop the bike. He'd quickly shushed her. The Tuscan survivors were out there, probably looking down at them. The fact they hadn't attacked yet, Ben had whispered, meant they were figuring out whether Ben and Annalene were alone. But it was just a matter of time. So he had started walking the bike toward the northern rise. Now Annalene saw them all on the other side of the hill. Plug-Eye knelt, weapon in hand, above 7 Tuscan warriors. The warriors had taken refuge in a blowout, a hollow formed by the wind rushing and eddying against the slopes leading toward the gorge. Lying prone in its shallow recesses, their tan capes blended in with the sand, protecting them from the eyes of whoever was in the skyhopper. Annalene looked up worried. She hadn't seen the flyer in a while. Maybe it needed refueling, or the posse no longer required it. Annalene sure needed it now. The sand people watched as she and Ben approached, some looking at them, some looking up.
They know it, she thought, breath catching in her throat. They know we're alone.
You're not alone, Ben said.
In the sandy indentation a dozen meters away, Plug-Eye rose. Others stood too, watchful of their leader. Unconsciously, Annalene slipped her right hand from the handlebar and felt for the blaster, holstered at her hip.
Don't, Ben said.
Bayark stared, dumbfounded. Surely the warrior's single remaining good eye was failing now. The humans, Hairy Face and the Airshaper, were walking steadily toward them. The Airshaper had no sirens here, no trickery.
Did she have such power that she could walk brazenly into the Tuscan's midst? Even if she did, such presumption had to be punished. Even hunted, even terrified, the Tuscans would exact revenge.
Bayark, a warrior said. Look!
Bayark looked between the humans and recognized the limp form on the vehicle. A Dean. Annalene forgot Ben's warning when the one-eyed warrior snarled. She released the handlebar and drew her blaster. The Tuscan started toward them. Behind, more sand people rose from the depression. But before Annalene could shoot, Ben moved in front of the bike and into the line of fire. Only then did Annalene realize that Ben had the dead boy's weapon in his hands. Ben raised the Gaderfi, and then did something that astonished Annalene and the Tuscans both. He placed it on the ground, slowly, so the Tuscans could clearly see what he was doing. Plug-Eye, who had closed half the distance to them in the previous moments, stopped. Ben kept his eyes on the Tuscans as he released the weapon and backed up.
"I'm showing," he said just above a murmur, "that I haven't taken a trophy."
He took another step back and gave the hover bike a gentle shove with his hand. Annalene, startled, clutched in vain at the seat as it passed. The vehicle floated gingerly across the distance to the lead Tuscan, who grabbed at it. In a hurried move, Plug-Eye yanked the body from the speeder bike and knelt over it, while the other warrior stood behind. Annalene watched as the hated marauder examined the body. Something was off. The crease of the cloth, the shape of the kneeling figure. But mostly, the way Plug-Eye touched the face of the dead youth.
"She's a female,"
Annalene whispered to Ben.
"She's his mother."
Ayark looked up at the sound of the airshaper's voice and howled.
"Who cares if the settlers hear?"
Fury charged through Ayark's tired limbs. Many foolish warriors had died this day, but Adin had acted as a Tuscan. Ayark bellowed and lifted her son's Gaderfi. Behind her, the others raised their rifles. The airshaper had caused this. Her existence had compelled Ayark to lead her people into this great massacre. Who cares if the airshaper has a blaster or great powers? She will pay! Before Ayark could take another step, Hairy Face darted in front of the airshaper, his brown robe parting as he moved. Metal flashed at the human's waist, catching the afternoon suns.
"A weapon? No matter!" Ayark charged
and stopped, looking again at the short metal rod hanging from a clip in the folds of the man's cloak. The airshaper could not see it, but Ayark could. And Ayark remembered seeing such a thing before, years earlier.
"Sharad,"
Ayark said, pointing at the man's half-hidden weapon.
"Sharad het."
Now it was Ben's turn to look stupefied. Annalene couldn't see what had made the Tuscan woman stop her advance. But whatever she had just said had apparently mystified Ben.
"Sharad."
Ben gently closed the folds of his cloak, suddenly seeming to understand.
"You knew Sharad hit."
Behind, a couple of the warriors started to move again. The war leader snarled at them. An argument ensued. Ben listened, keenly interested.
"Ayark," Ben finally said, daring to interrupt. "That is your name? Ayark!"
Hearing her name in a settler's mouth made Ayark flinch. Names were precious things to Tuscans. The humans gave names to animals, so they would come when called. No settler had the right to call a Tuscan anywhere. Not if he wanted to live. And yet Hairy Face was something else. He carried the blade that made light, just like Sharad Het, the wizardly warrior who came to live with their people so many years before, a being wielding the same magic powers Ayark had ascribed to the airshaper. One of Ayark's younger companions started forward again. He had not known Sharad, not understood the human's power. Before Ayark could say anything, Hairy Face raised his hand.
"You don't want to hurt us,"
he said, using the strange settler words. Ayark understood them, barely.
She had learned the talk from her adopted sister, Kishik, and Het, whom her sister had married. The young warrior did not know the human words, and yet he said them now in the Tuscan tongue.
I don't want to hurt you.
There has been enough killing, Hairy Face said.
There has been enough killing, the warrior repeated.
A Yark gawked. Those were words no Tuscan had ever said in any language. There was no doubt. A Yark realized her mistake. The air shaper hadn't saved herself from being crushed out in the desert that day. It had been Hairy Face with the power all along. A Yark recalled the settler building from earlier, and the bodies on the floor. The blows dealt her kin had not resembled blaster marks, and Sand People surely knew those. A Yark hadn't thought anything of it then, but now.
Stay back!
A Yark told her companions.
I will explain later. Stay back! And beware.
The Tuscans shifted anxiously but complied, moving back toward the depression. Ben? The air shaper asked Hairy Face now, frightened and puzzled.
Ben!
A Yark said, looking again at the silvery weapon barely visible within his cloak.
You are Ben!
Annalene had thought she was past the point of shock, but hearing basic words in the braying voice of a sand person was yet another stunner. Ben simply nodded.
You would know the words, wouldn't you? He said carefully. His voice was soothing, as smooth as when he'd spoken earlier to Ayark's companions. Somehow, they'd understood and complied.
Annalene gawked. Who is this guy?
Perhaps you can understand this, Ben said, pointing to the body behind the Yark. This woman, Annalene, did not shoot your son. You know the burns. That mark was from a long-range rifle.
A Yark did not turn to look.
One settler killed. All settlers killed.
You are mistaken.
This wasn't something to debate, Annalene thought. She'd certainly shot at plenty of Tuscans earlier at the claim. Ben seemed to want to diffuse the immediate tension, at least with his words. His body remained poised, ready to act. Although Annalene didn't know what an unarmed man could do against the Tuscan woman and her band.
The Tuscan woman.
Annalene looked at a Yark, seen before through a mist of fire retardant and by others only amid panic. As far as Annalene had ever heard, Tuscans had distinct gender roles. Males fought. Women tended the banthas. The few images she'd seen showed Tuscan females dressed in even bulkier outfits, their hoods pulled down over large faceplates. But the one-eyed Tuscan before them was outfitted as all the others, save for the lack of bandolier. Ben pointed to the suns, creeping closer to the heights of the western Jundland. He spoke in simple terms, matching the Tuscans.
You struck. The settler struck. The day ends. We will depart.
He nodded to the east, where hooting and hollering had commenced beyond the hillside.
We depart, and you depart, he added ominously. While you can.
A Yark looked down at the Gaddurfi stick in her hands. It had belonged to her father. And it had not saved him, nor had it saved her son. It was right to plunge its point into humans, to crush them with its bulk, to grind their bones with its flanges. Hairy Face, Ben, might have the power to kill her.
She would die, but the others would live, and they would exact a price.
But then, Ayark thought again of the magic weapon the man carried, and the last time she had seen one. She wanted to know more, but knowledge could not come from a dead wizard. And if the human cheers over the ridge meant the rest of the band was gone, then Ayark and the survivors could not linger. Ayark turned back to Adine. Handing her Gaderfi to another, she heaved the corpse from the ground.
"We depart, and you depart," Ayark said. "While you can."
"48," Mullen said. 48!
Orin looked down at the canyon floor as he descended the rocky stair.
"That the head count?"
Mullen gave a laugh, a rare guttural thing that had always made his father cringe.
"I can't make any guarantees about body parts," Mullen said. "Some of the Tuskies that fell hit pretty hard."
Orin surveyed the scene. It was truly a mess. The trail of Tuscan corpses wound around the corner of the gorge and out of sight. He whistled.
"I didn't think this many hit us at the oasis." "There were some in camps east of the claim that Jayla G saw," Mullen said, referring to their friend in the skyhopper. "I think they were in reserve to take captives, but when the Tuscans at the claim fled, they all went."
Most of the vigilantes had already made their way down here, making sure none of the injured sand people would come back to haunt them. Oren's daughter was here too, trying her best to make her way through the organic obstacle course at the foot of the eastern rock face.
"Disgusting," Vika said, holding her nose. "Let's get out of here."
Before Oren could respond, a shrill beep resounded from his pocket.
"Just a second," he said, pulling out the comlink. "How's our recon, Sky One?"
"All clear, Master Galt,"
crackled the voice of the Skyhopper pilot. Oren had directed her to complete a wide circle.
"And it looks like you were right,"
Jayla said.
"Annie Caldwell and that drifter were here, but they've ridden off to the west."
"The west?" Oren's eyebrow rose. "West to Ben's place, maybe?" The claim was back to the north. He thought to go after them, but then an approaching group of celebrants reminded him of what needed to come next. Rifle-toting Jabe was among them, receiving backslaps from the older settlers. Oren clicked off the comlink and smiled.
"You get any, son?"
"I did, sir. Or I think so."
"Well, pick out a prize so we can go."
Beaming, Jabe stepped toward the twin tangles of metal. The vigilantes had piled the gaffy sticks and rifles separately. The boy looked back at Oren.
"You think the one that got my dad is here?"
"Great sons, boy. I don't know. Just pick your favorite."
While Jabe deliberated, Oren edged back to confer with Mullen.
"We need any of this junk?"
"No, we've got plenty."
Jabe reached into the Gaderfi pile and found a silvery specimen, shorter than the others and relatively clean.
Vika laughed. "Just your size, runt."
The others laughed at the blushing kid before surrounding him, offering congratulations. Oren looked back at the killing ground. The Tuscans deserved every bit of this, surely. His boy Varen, Danar Caldwell, even that Lars woman, all had gotten some justice today. But Oren understood that squaring accounts here made for a change to the rest of the balance sheet.
"Will Zed be ready to go again soon?" he whispered to his son.
"I wouldn't count on it," Mullen said. "Doc Mel only had a second with him, but he said he could be out for a month this time. Maybe more."
He raised a hairy eyebrow.
"Why? Are you afraid this thing today will mess us up?"
"I don't know," Oren said.
He turned back to the crowd and locked eyes on Jabe. The boy always looked happy outside the store, but now he was positively over the suns. Jabe spotted Oren and raised his shiny trophy, earning another cheer from the others. Oren smiled back. The boy was really growing up. He joined the applause.
"That's it, folks," he said, stepping into the crowd. "First the racers tried to ruin our good time, and then the Tuskens. Let's get back to the claim and show him we still know how to celebrate."
Chapter 20.
With care, a Yark placed one rock upon another. It was important to select the right mix of stones. The pile had to last for eternity, holding the remains of a Deen above Tatooine's surface. Tomorrow's only matter to the dead. A Yark's clan did not bury their fallen, nor could they here in the shadows of the pillars, where the ground was tough enough to snap off the end of any pick. No, a Deen would lay atop the bed altar, protected from wildlife by massifs, the trained reptilians the Tuskens kept as camp guardians. His battle then would be against the suns, his spirit against theirs. Eventually, even the most defiant warrior's body would succumb to the wind. Then a new level would be built over his remains, the growing mound providing a tower to support the body of that warrior's sons or grandsons. But the graves of Adin's ancestors were far away, in a different part of the wastes. So here, in the evening shadows of this misbegotten place, a Yark silently built a solitary bier for a boy who had been warrior for less than a week. No descendants would join his tower, but his spirit would last as long as the stones of his resting place did. A Yark chose carefully. It was the work of a mother. A Yark was that, and a warrior as well. The traditional divided roles of the past were a luxury the clan could not afford. There simply weren't enough to fill them. All had changed after a single dread day 14 cycles earlier. Today's losses had been bad, but they were nothing compared with what had happened the day the clan battled the Hutts. The day Sherrod Het died. A Yark stopped sorting and wondered. It was safe now to pause and reflect. As safe as it was going to get. She thought about Ben's weapon and visualized the owner of the other she'd seen. Sherrod Het was the Utman, the outlander of local legend, but to a Yark, he was a real being. He was in fact family, because of a different human a Yark had met first, Kishik. A Yark had been born as Kiyark, the youngest of six children. When three of her siblings died from plague, her father Yark repopulated his household through a time-honored practice, abduction. Kishik, so named by the Tuskens who kidnapped her from a local settlement, was nearly an adult when she came to live with a Yark's family. A Yark, still a child, was granted the privilege, too often a chore, of bestowing on Kishik the ways and words of the Tuskens. In so doing, a Yark learned some of the soulless breathings the settlers called words. She remembered them well, evidently, as the one